Okay. So if you go, I believe it's going to be Feast of Sukkot website. They're going to have the classes. So if you want the first half of it, you should be able to, from somewhere, get it at some point. Today we're going to be more talking about how to do a detox or a fast and get into all that fun stuff. So, and I'm a pretty interactive teacher for those of you that weren't here yesterday. So if you have questions, please ask them as they come along. So we don't have to wait till the end and yeah. So any questions before we begin? No? Wonderful. Rosalie? Okay, Rosalie. Okay. So these are some steps that you can consider when prepping for either a detox or a fast. So detox being more still eating, doing herbs, doing supplements, doing different things fast. When I say fast, I mean water fasting. So of course my first step here is going to be to pray about it, as far as all of these kind of different steps, really. So the length of your fast. This is a big topic. I could talk for a while on that. So if you've never done a detox, a fast before, 3 days is a pretty common length that someone might try. And the length of it can be anything. You can go for a couple days. You can go for, depending on if you're eating or not eating, weeks, months. If you're not eating, you can go a long time in a detox type of phase. But the length of it is important. Where and when, if you're just doing a detox and you can go to work and you can do everything kind of that you normally can, that's not super important. When you're fasting, I feel like it's a little bit more important as far as where you are and when you're doing it. A lot of people will take off time of work, and especially when you're water fasting, sometimes you don't have lots of energy. Not always the best focus, or you know, sometimes you have really good energy and really good focus, but it can be unpredictable. You don't know until you know, until you're in it sometimes. So if you want to do it at home, fine, but just be aware of the environment you're in. If you want to go somewhere and do it, which is what I prefer to do, I prefer to go away, then arranging that if possible. And then when, that would be with work schedules, that would be with the time of year. Sometimes that matters. Major area of focus. So this can be anything, but especially when going into a fast, it's going to be, okay, am I petitioning the Father for something? Do I have something in my heart that I want clarity on? Is there a scripture I'm trying to understand? Is there healing that I want for myself, for somebody else? Even with detoxification, you know, like we talked yesterday, do I want to just clean my liver? Do I want to clean my colon, my kidneys? Do I want, you know, these rashes to improve? You know, whatever it is. It can be a couple of them. You know, it's good to figure out kind of what, kind of some ideas of what you want to get out of your fast or what kind of your goals are with it or your detox. And then we talked about work. Stress is a big thing you want to try to avoid when you're detoxing and fasting. Because when you're stressed, when you're in fight or flight, when you're in that constant go, 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 even if you're not really feeling stressed, but if you're a person that is busy all the time and does all the time, your body is generally not going to release toxins very well. So when you're in fight or flight, let's say, you know, in times of old when their fight or flight was initiated, it was because, you know, say you're out in the field doing your gardening and a bear shows up. So you have fight or flight mechanism that kicks in. You're either going to fight, which I don't advise, or you're going to flee, right? But what's going to happen is your body is going to release a lot of hormones in that moment. It's going to release adrenaline, right? It's going to release cortisol and cortisone, which are adrenal hormones. These are all adrenal hormones when we were talking about adrenals yesterday. To free up energy into your bloodstream to go to your muscles to help you survive. This is how the body works. So when you get in that stress response, that fight or flight, like, okay, I got this deadline, and oh my goodness, like Susie Q is having a problem on her tasks, or there's this, or there's that, or whatever it is, and you get that burst kind of like stress, that's a fight or flight often scenario where you're having those release of hormones. adrenaline, cortisol, cortisone. So the body physiologically thinks fight or flight. We need energy to fight, to flee, to do something to survive right now, this stressful situation. However, this day and age, stress is usually here. It's not usually something we need physical energy for. This is one of the reasons why people gain weight when they're stressed, because your body frees up all of this energy, sends it to your muscles, but you're stuck at a computer desk all day long and you don't use it, right? So when you're in that fight or flight mode, when you're in stress, when you're anxious, when you're constantly thinking, constantly going, and not getting enough relax and downtime, the body is shifted out of the mode of kind of day to day, and it's shifted in survival. So when your body thinks a bear is chasing it, it doesn't detox. It just puts all the energy towards survival, kind of shuts your detox pathways down, can shut your digestion down, shut reproduction down. Those things aren't important. Important thing is survival. So it's just a different mode the body goes into. So if you've been the type of person that has been in that before, or for long periods of time, it's generally can be tough on your health. But when you're trying to detox and fast, it's really helpful to try to shift yourself, at least for that time. Give yourself, you know, if you still have a stressful life, I get it. If you still got to work, you know, you have commitments, we all have them. But to try to at least maybe set aside some more time to rest, to relax, to pray, you know. At the very least, I tell people if you're fasting, if you're water fasting, you can at least take the time you used to eat to sit, you know, to pray, to do something quiet, to be something calming. Because when you're not spending time buying food, prepping food, cooking food, eating food, there's quite a bit more time in your day than you realize. Okay, then some, you know, a lot of people can do fasting on their own and they're fine and detoxing that, but if you feel like you need somebody to help you, if you're on a lot of medications, this is where it can become more concerning because you need someone to kind of monitor those things for you. Can be helpful to get an expert on board. And then it can be helpful and I think very interesting to get lab work done before and after fast because you can see all the changes, because I like that stuff, so it's interesting to me. But it is, you can easily see changes, and of course you can see changes physically that you experience, you know, yourself. So next slide, Liz Reed.
I have a question though.
Of course, yeah.
So what kind of labs do they do? I mean, do you go, you tell them you just want labs, or you say, you know, I'm gonna be doing a fast, or?
Who are you talking to? Are you talking to your primary? Are you talking to?
You don't want to tell me.
I mean, are you talking to like working with a primary doctor, or are you talking to working with a lab, or who you work? Because it depends on who you're talking to.
There's a difference.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
If you're talking to your primary, you can just say, hey, can I just have my yearly, it's like your CBC, your CMP, your lipid profile. If you're looking at inflammation, maybe some inflammation markers, depending on what you have going on with your health, whether it's thyroid or hormones, things like that. If they're your primary, they're probably going to know all that.
Right.
And just be like, hey, you know, hopefully you can just say, hey, can you just run my labs? You know, if you can coordinate them with your yearly checkup, that's nice. If not, and I don't know if explaining your fasting is going to go over well with, you know, it might depend on your doctor, you know, if they would be open to that. So most probably are not. So
it is really cool to go back after you've had your labs done, after you've done the fast, then you go back to your primary doctor and say, hey, I just did this water fast. I would like to have my labs re-ran.
So what's it?
Now
that's fun. Just had labs done. What is that to a lab?
Yeah, I mean,
they send that to your doctor, then
you can go to a lab. You don't have to go to a doctor, right?
Well, I mean, some independent labs you can go to. There's not many. I don't know about this area as well as I know about Illinois. Though, if anybody want labs done, I can run them in any lab core, and I don't really charge much. And I wouldn't charge much at all for you guys. So if you just want labs done before and after, I can order them. It's pretty simple. Okay, so this, I'm gonna have two different slides here. This is for a plan for a detox. So this is going to involve eating. The next slide will involve water fasting. So this is how to design kind of a rough way to design a detox plan. So the number of days we talked about, this basically I tell people, they're like, okay, I don't know how many days to do. A lot of people don't know. You usually want to pick the amount of days that you know you can be successful. The most important thing with deciding how many days, I believe, is you want, if you've not done it before, you want your first experience or you want the beginning experiences to be successful. You don't want to set kind of the goal too high. Come on in. And not follow through all the way. You want to be able to get all the way through properly the first time. So always better to set a shorter goal first and succeed than a longer goal and not succeed. It's discouraging and it's not very good for your body if you break it, your fast, your detox before you desired to. We'll talk about problems with that. But so even if it's one day, or even if you start with intermittent fasting, if you haven't done intermittent fasting, which is, you know, just going a certain number of hours during a day without eating. So, and the really important thing is to remember to factor in breaking your cleanse. So we're going to talk a lot about how to break mostly a water fast. A detox is really good to break as well. But once you get into longer fasts, longer detoxes, how you come out of that is incredibly important. And so normally you don't just, especially with water fasting, if you water fasted for a week, the eighth day you just don't go back to eating how you were eating. It's a slow process, slow. So we're gonna go over that in detail. I really want you all to stay for that because that's very important. But that's part of it, kind of. A lot of people say, okay, I'll do 3 days. Or let's say someone picks 7 days. Okay, I'll just set off 7 days. But then you also have to factor in usually about 2 or 3 days after of transition before you can go completely back. So that's part of that timeline as well. Specifically with detoxification, you know, wet body systems, which we talked about the other day, that was liver, kidney, colon, lymph, or immune system, and your blood and your skin. Those are general ones. You can also do like hormone-related detoxifications. That's another really popular one, especially with women. You can really base it on anything, whatever you're trying to heal within your body, and tailor everything to it. So you can tailor diet to that. So I'll do a liver cleanse as an example. So let's say we're focusing on liver. We can say we're doing like just a general 3-day liver cleanse. Diet adjustments, for example, would be something like not eating foods that are bad for the liver. So this would be really fatty foods, fried foods, oily foods, even good oils would be good. So like the major foods to avoid on a liver detox would be fried foods. That's one of the worst, and alcohol. Sugar to some degree, but fried foods and alcohol are some of the worst and hardest on our liver. After that, it would be try to avoid processed foods, your processed white flour type products and white sugar type products, and generally a lot of fat at all. Fat is what makes the liver work more. It has to process fat. So it's not that necessarily like olive oil and avocados are bad for you, but if you want to give your liver a break and help it focus on other things like cleaning itself up, don't give it more of a burden by eating fat. You can kind of shelf the fat for a while, even the healthy fat, to help your liver do something else, kind of thing. And then you can go further with a detox, and you can just go mostly to like fruits and vegetables, or the liver likes lots of dark greens, any kind of vegetable that's green. It likes beets, specifically artichokes, greens, and so you can focus your diet predominantly on those sorts of foods. Or you can go to something like a juice fast or cleanse, which we spoke of, which is mostly vegetable juices, and do a lot of liver supporting juices on that. So the diet's usually with a detox really flexible to, if you're picking 3 days, you're thinking, okay, what can I eat and what would be reasonable for me to do for that 3 days where I know, yes, I can do that successfully. Is it just cutting out fried food and alcohol? If that's all you think you can start with, start there. It's a start. It's better than what you are doing. If you think you can go all the way into a juice fast and do that, then you know, start that. If you start doing your cleanse and you notice like, oh, I don't feel well, you know, if you're on day one and you're going into a juice fast and you're like, okay, this isn't working so well, then you stop. You eat something else. You know, you don't go eat a cheeseburger, hopefully, but you eat something to, and you reevaluate. So so diet is pretty flexible with the detox. Herbal and nutritional additions. So this is usually things that help to improve detoxification. So for liver, there's a lot. So there's things like milk, there's herbs. So there's things like milk thistle and dandelion and burdock root, chaparral, different types of bitter anythings, anything that's bitter. That's why dandelion's one. Bitter greens, watercress, you know, those types of foods, arugula, chards and all of that. You can take, and there you can drink herbal teas if you don't want to do supplements. You can do different things depending on, for example, some people with livers that need detoxification have heavy metals in their body. So if you suspect that, then there's things you can do for heavy metals like chlorella or spirulina. Those are algaes that, if you've not heard of those, that can pull heavy metals out of the body. And there's other things that can do that as well. Zeolites or binders like clays or activated charcoal, things like that. So this is also very wide and broad as far as all the different things you can add in and tailor specifically for what's going on with you and your body. And the natural therapies, we talked a little bit about the other day. We talked about colonics, dry skin brushing came up, and rebounding is another one, which I mentioned is that like a mini trampoline and jumping on it, that moves your lymph system. For liver specifically, castor oil packs are really good. Castor oil packs is essentially taking castor oil and soaking a rag with it, like a fleece is really good, putting it on the area of your liver. And then putting a hot pack on it and kind of sitting there with it. They do sell kits that are not so messy as just a towel nowadays, where you can just strap it on and go about your day. But what that does is it helps to pull toxins out through your skin from your liver. Castor oil packs are really good for pain and hormones and a whole bunch of stuff, but they're really good for the liver. Getting any kind of outside time, also very helpful. Someone mentioned grounding the other day, that's good. Baths, water, fresh air, sunlight, everything the earth offers, all very healing. So thinking about what you want to have time to incorporate in. Yeah?
I'm sorry, do you have to be selective on the type of castor oil that you use?
I mean, I would try to get a higher quality organic type. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I would try to factor in time for those things, right? And when you're thinking about, okay, you're kind of what's going to happen with it. And then not last, but definitely not least, an increase of what you're going to be doing as far as, especially if you're part of this is petitioning for healing. Usually detox is more for healing, but you can certainly incorporate anything that you are wanting to do with the Father at that time, whether that's just connect with him on a deeper connection, hear from him about something, you know, whatever that is, whether that's increased prayer, increased meditation, just sitting and listening, you know, dance, worship, music, whatever that is, to allow him to speak to you, time in the word and all of that. So a lot of us, we're really good at praying, but we're not always good at listening because it's harder to listen. So setting aside time where we really are truly can listen. I don't know what that, I think it's different for each person. I know for myself, if I get outside and in nature, I feel more connected and I can quiet my mind more and I can listen easier. So I know for me, when I'm doing my longer fasts, I prefer them in the summer, because if I do them in the winter, it's not very fun to go outside. So that's my own personal, you know, you could certainly do that anytime, but that's something that makes my fast much more enjoyable for myself. Detoxes, though, I do other times of the year. Okay. Rosalie? All right, fasting plan. Similar, but a little bit different. So again, number of days. This, I would say, with a water fast, you want to really start off slow. So if you've never done a water fast before, I would start with intermittent fasting. So first step I would say is just kind of see how many hours you're currently going without eating. So most people can easily go 12. Most people kind of are already going 12. If you stop eating at 8 o'clock at night and don't put anything caloric in your body until 8 o'clock in the morning, that's 12 hours. So most people get that already. Pushing it to 14, most people can do fairly without too much trouble. And then you kind of, what you can do when you're trying to get into water fasting is just push that up a little bit more and a little bit more. Maybe not every day, but when you feel like you just want to see, or spend a whole day just saying, okay, let me see how far I can go. Or, I mean, most people have probably done water fast with Yom Kippur, at least. Yes? Mm-hmm. So you already have an idea, right, of how your body reacts. If you feel like you really have a hard time with that and it's difficult, we did talk a little bit about some of the things last class that could be part of the reasons why a water fast is difficult, like the low blood sugar, the stress, the adrenal fatigue, you know, having that be a factor as well. So if you've done the one day and you've done like Yom Kippur and you've done well with it, going to a 3 day is reasonable, or you could do 2 days, you know, either of those are fine. But again, once you start getting into 3, 3, 5, 7, 14 up, is when you have to consider what you do when you break it. 1 or 2 days, it's not really so important. Once you start getting to 3, you need to be concerned for that. For about every 3 days, and we'll talk about this later, for every 3 days you water fast, you need 1 day of breaking. You need to spend a whole day breaking. So once you hit 3 days, so if you decide to do a 3 day water fast, ideally you want 1 day before to kind of prepare your body into it. It helps, you don't have to, but it really helps. And then 1 day after for sure, to transition, and we'll talk about that more later. Okay, body system again that you'll focus on for that. Water fasting usually, there's the healing potential is much stronger usually. So if there's, again, something within your body you're wanting healing for, that's really helpful. Water intake. So this is the shining star here. This is all you get, right? So deciding how much water you get, the quality of your water, is important. So one of the major problems with our water is it's toxic, it's polluted, and it's dead. It's not living water. So a lot of people get city water, that's usually dead water. What I mean by dead, it's not living in nature, it's not energized, it's taken from the sewer system and then treated. Yeah, treated. Filtered, you know, but they're only filtering the horrible stuff that the EPA says they have to. They don't filter the medications, and they don't filter all of the runoff from all the farming fields of all the pesticides. So the city water will also add the chloride, the fluoride, all of that potentially, and then you have well water, which is going to have tons of runoff from wherever you're getting it from. I mean, our water system, unfortunately, is polluted. The water system in the earth is kind of like the blood in our body. So the blood in our body is like what's cleaning us, what keeps us clean. It's like what flows through our body, and the water is what flows through the earth and kind of cleans everything up. Well, the earth is filthy, right? So the water is filthy. So good water filtrations, especially during a fast, or like reverse osmosis, distillation, there's others. I don't know as much about Berkey and Kangen and all of those that speak on them. I tend to prefer RO or distilled because it gets out 99% of everything, absolutely everything.
I have a question about distilled.
Yeah.
Can you drink as much distilled as you like? Because I've read different things on that. Like it's totally...
Well, right. So I wouldn't drink just, so this is, we got about this in this yesterday a little bit about whether you should drink distilled.
40 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Been drinking
for 40
years.
Gotcha. So you're going to have difference of opinion. So I'm only going to speak from my opinion, of course, and I understand and respect other people's opinions on it. But I believe that distilled water doesn't exist naturally in nature, and we would have never drank it. We wouldn't have drank just H2O. However, distilling, the reason I do it and advocate for it is because it eliminates everything, right? And that's the first step. But then I add minerals back to it because water is supposed to naturally contain minerals. If you go to a stream bed, you know, if you think you're out in nature and you wanted water, Or where do the animals get their water? They typically get it from running water. You wouldn't go to some stagnant pond or lake that's disgusting. Like, you'd go from a stream that's clear, hopefully, and moving. And there's usually rocks in it. There's usually where the minerals come from. It's moving, it's alive, it's got energy.
Is there certain that you add back in? Or do I just need to go?
So I use something called Trace Mineral Drops.
I know what that is. Okay.
Yep.
We have that.
Very
okay.
popular. Yep.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Yep. Blue bottle. Yep. It has a lot of the trace minerals, has very little sodium, which is nice because it's usually not, most people aren't lacking sodium chloride. So they're lacking other minerals. So RO.
Your RO water as well?
Yeah, I was just, you're exactly where I was going. Yeah, RO, you would want to add that too. As well, RO removes most things, right? Just not absolutely everything. And sometimes adding trace mineral drops in general to whatever water you're drinking during a fast is a really good idea, especially when fasting. Yeah?
What about lemon?
Lemon? Not with water. I would not say with water fasting.
What did she say?
She asked if we should add lemon to our water when water fasting. I don't see that being biblical. I don't, they just drank water. I mean, they just didn't consume anything. So I might be a little bit more of a extremist in that sense. I'm not saying at all that's, if somebody does it, I'm not gonna judge them and say, you know, their fast isn't gonna work. Personally, I wouldn't do it and wouldn't advise it. Though the minerals would naturally exist in there anyway. That's why I think that's okay to add, because water's supposed to have minerals in it. And lemon wouldn't naturally exist in our water, kind of thing. So during a water fast, some people, especially hypoglycemics, which is probably one of the most common seen side effects, for lack of better words, is that people feel fatigued or they're tired. I don't know if any of you get this on Yom Kippur, maybe towards the end, where you just kind of feel like your energy isn't there. That a lot of times can be low electrolytes, not low blood sugar. Can be low blood sugar, but a lot of times when you eat, you're boosting your electrolytes as well. So there's a bit of, I think, confusion on that. A lot of times if you just put your electrolytes, which is what you get from your trace minerals that you put in your water, your minerals you put back in, that you won't experience that nearly as much. Now you still might, if it's truly hypoglycemia, if it's truly low blood sugar, you're still gonna feel that, unfortunately. But if it is electrolytes, adding minerals to your water, you most likely will not feel that, at least nearly as strong. Major changer for me with my water fasting. The amount of water is not super important as far as, you know, most people, if you're thirsty, just drink water. It's kind of simple, but if you want a general rule of thumb, it's about half your body weight in ounces. So if you weigh 150 pounds, drink 75 ounces of water, general ballpark. Better than that, I think, is to drink according to the color of your urine. You don't want clear urine. That means you're overhydrating. You're drinking too much, which puts a stress on your kidneys. You certainly, everybody knows you don't want dark colored urine, right? So you want somewhere in between, pale yellow kind of thing is ideal. So you can judge your water intake by that. And you can also just, if you get hungry, because of course that's a factor, drink water, you know? So that's, I wouldn't worry about the water consumption too much, just being successful on your cleanse. So hunger is, I think, one of the bigger deterrents of not wanting to do water fasting. It's because people, you know, it's can be overwhelming to think about that, or going a long period of time without eating. Some people, when you get into it, it's easier than others. So sometimes just having a plan as to what you will do when the hunger cues come. Typically with longer fasts, hunger does go away, or can go away, after a few days. Not always, but it can. So in the beginning, it's a little bit more important. Usually the first, again, if you're doing a longer one, 3 or 4 days are the worst. And then you kind of just settle in a little bit, I guess, right? So there are different ways of doing that. Of course, praying right, at those times. Not always the first thing that comes to our mind when we're hitting cravings and things like that, but having something in the plan, like, of this is what I'm going to do at the normal times I would eat where I would be hungry. So if you're home and everybody's eating, and you're with the family, I'm going to go do this while everybody else is eating. Or if I'm going to sit at the table and be with everybody, I'm going to have a prayer journal or something, or I'm going to be doing something at that time intentionally to help with that. And then natural therapies, this is very similar to what I mentioned with the liver cleanse. So this can be, you can still do natural therapies on this. So that is similar to what I spoke of before. And then same with the last one, increase in. And you have with the water fast, you have way more time. Like I said, you're gonna have a lot of free time. Again, I guess that depends on how much you do prep and cook and spend eating. Whatever time that is, you're gonna have it. Whether that's a lot or not. Any questions on any of those? We good? Yes?
I had a question.
Yeah.
What about exercise? You know, during that time, we had to be low-key active, or it's okay to do walks and stuff like that?
So during fasting?
Yes.
So doing water fasting, I would not exercise. Okay. That's a good point. Thank you for bringing that up. I wouldn't do, you know, if you're used to doing any kind of something that I would say gets your heart rate going, I would not do that. Walking, you know, if you feel good and want to walk, great. I would say things that are more relaxing, walking probably being the most common, you know, because it's not going to super increase your heart rate. It's going to be good for you. Yeah, but if you don't have the energy, then of course don't push it. But yeah, definitely a good thing to incorporate. Okay. All right, next. So during your fast. So obviously prayer is a big part of it, rest and relaxation. Again, I kind of spoke to it already, but you are going to detox much more in a calm state. In a relaxed state. So even if you have to do things, anytime you can get quiet, get the mind to shut down, be outside, whatever it is going to significantly improve what you eliminate in your body. We talked about water. And then these are kind of the four different things that we get from being outside. So the fresh air is, like, the people I think might kind of roll their eyes at this one, but you can go a good amount of time without food. Shua went 40 days. Apparently, you can somehow go 40 days without water, but we can't quite go, or all of us cannot quite go that long without water, right? We can go a long time without food. And I've known people that have gone months and months and months. 180 days, I think, was the most recent one I heard. Very overweight person is how they were able to do that, but we can't go very long without water. And how long can you go without air? Right? That's how important that is. It's important. We spend, health conscious people spend a lot of time and energy on what we eat. We spend less time and energy generally on what we drink, and way less on what we breathe. So breathing is incredibly important. Yes?
I have a question. I grew up without air conditioning, and I have no allergies. But I've noticed that people nowadays have tons and tons of allergies everywhere I go.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking it's because they live in closed up buildings and they're not breathing fresh air.
Yeah, that certainly could have
it's
a lot to
do. Just a question. I'm not sure of it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of changes, you know, that have happened in even a decade, let alone a couple decades,
our
you
homes
know.
Can be toxic.
Oh, they are. They are.
The
I mean, yeah, our homes are more toxic than what's outside, for sure. And yeah, what Lisa said here with the off-gassing, like if you build a house and get new furniture and move in, that is like one of the most toxic environments you can be in, because all the new things with the building are going to be releasing chemicals and toxins initially the most. Same thing with furniture. Brand new furniture is releasing chemicals and toxins for quite some time. So it's really good if you did that to leave the doors, the windows, whatever you can open, and to get an air filter. Really good quality air filter. Air filters I recommend for everybody because the majority of your time is spent in your house, and air is the most vital nutrient we need to live. It's the breath of life. That's what gives us life. So, and most of us don't breathe deeply at all. We shallow breathe. So as I'm sitting up here talking, including myself, I am not deep breathing at all. I'm taking little gasps of air in between sentences. So before I came here, I was doing some deep breathing, and I will probably do some later today to make up for it. But there's very often, like I just heard over here, right? Do you just go? I mean, we just don't do that. We just keep breathing all day long, and we just don't ever think about it. We're not conscious of it. We're not aware about it. So even just taking a few minutes, going outside, taking a few deep breaths, doesn't have to be long, and it's incredibly calming. Candy.
I'm going to sit down. If anybody's hugging me, what do I say? Take a deep breath. Because there's nothing like hugging another female or another person, period. And then taking that deep breath in that hug is just so, you just go from here to it relaxes you, it takes that, it calms down the cortisol, it calms down the adrenaline. It does all that.
It does.
Deep breathing is amazing.
Way.
That's what God does when we're born. He gives us that breath of air.
Right. That's what makes us alive. And once that breath is gone, they say the heart, but once that breath is gone, that's the ruach, right? That's it. So, breathe. All the day. All day long, every day, all the time. So, and fresh air. So even more important on your cleanse. Hopefully you're not in an area where it's highly polluted. And you can get to a place that has clean air. It's getting harder and harder, but outside air is better than inside air usually. So water, we talked about that a bit, but obviously drinking, bathing, there is, come on in. There is, you know, colonics, enemas as well, which are not nearly as popular, but those are all different ways to use water for detoxification. And certainly that would be like going in bodies of water if it's summer. As well, that's going to be healing water, living water on the skin. We detox through our skin all the time. So when you go into water, you guys talked about this yesterday with the cigarette smoke in the was it the hot tub? I think somebody over here mentioned.
Yeah. And just a regular bathtub, as hot as possible.
It's coming out of us all the time. Yeah.
We were talking about our water system is so polluted. So if you don't have a water filtration system in your home, most people can't afford that.
Right.
You take a bath, you're bathing in whatever the city has put into your water and bringing that in through your skin.
Right.
So it's still better to do that than not do it.
So that's a good point. So if I was in that situation, I would probably put clay in my bath. So things like bentonite clay. There's a lot of different clays, but what they do is they bind to toxins, right? So there are different types of components we can either put in our body or put on our skin that usually like absorb things. So things can be absorbent or adsorbent. So things are absorbed, like a sponge absorbs. But once it absorbs, that's it. It can only absorb so much. Clay is adsorbent, so it's like a magnet. So it doesn't suck things into it, it just attracts things. So it can just attach itself to whatever pollutants, chemicals, junk is in that water and attach to it and make it and less harmful.
Give us a good opportunity to pray and anoint our water.
Yes, right? Well, yeah, you could certainly pray over it and then not be sick.
A good way to detox is to put that clay on the bottom of your feet and let it dry and pull stuff out.
Yep, or do just put it in water and soak your feet any of that. Clay is very healing. Yeah.
What are your thoughts on like a cold plunge or an ice bath?
Very good. Is that something you've done before?
Yes.
Yeah. Hats off to you. I haven't gotten there yet.
I'm there with you.
Ooh, I got a sauna. I can do that, but.
Isn't that stressful on your
Which one?
The cold plunge.
I mean, Both can, right? So going to any temperature extreme, whether it's hot with a sauna, which more people are familiar with, or cold with an ice bath, it's going to be a stressor because our body needs to keep our temperature always within a certain range, or that's it, you know. So anytime we have to alter that, if we go outside, you know, even in the winter, that's a stressor, right? Or we go out and it's 100 degrees outside, that's a stressor because the body has to cool that. So yeah, I would say you probably have some good experience with your ice baths. I mean, it would be a good addition, I would say.
I did quite a bit of it this summer just because it was hot, and then I work out with my son, and from my understanding, it's good for muscle therapy.
Mm-hmm.
But I noticed after I would get out, I was completely refreshed. And
yeah.
I felt good for hours after the fact.
Yeah. It's very, from what I understand, not personal experience, but from what I understand, it's very energizing. It's good for the nervous system. It helps inflammation, all those sorts of things. So yeah, it would be, if that is something that you could incorporate in, then great. Yeah?
I thought, when someone told me about that, I was like, there's no way. And they said, so when you're finishing your shower, mm-hmm. turn off the hot water. And stand there as long as you possibly can, and then get out. Mm-hmm. So at least that will, you know.
Right, right.
And
something.
Stay a little bit longer, and a little bit longer, and a little bit longer.
Another thing that you can do, I'll get to you guys, is do what's called hot and cold water therapy, mm-hmm. where.
That's what I was gonna share.
Okay. Well, then go ahead and share it.
No, go for it.
Okay. Well, basically, mm-hmm. while you're in the shower, it's easier where you'll. You know, if you're in your normal shower, usually it's warm, and then you will put the water however cold you can tolerate. Don't make it freezing because you won't stay long, but you know, you make it cold where your body's like, oh, that's cold. And then try to stay there 30 seconds, a minute, however long you can stay there, then go back to the heat. And if it was a minute, stay in the heat a minute, and then go back to the cold for a minute, and you go back and forth. And what that does is when we heat our body, when our body is warmer, your blood goes to the surface. This is why we get red. That's your blood coming to the surface. And this is our body trying to cool us off, right? Because the blood is going to the surface. When we're cold, our blood goes internally to keep us warm, to keep our vital organs warm. And our extremities get cold, and so we get paler with that as the blood is going in. So if you're going hot, then cold, and hot, then cold, which is what you know, they do in Sweden when they sit in the hot tub and go jump in the snow and then go back in the hot tub and go back and forth. You're basically pumping and moving your blood and your lymph in these systems, which is very good for your body. It's another healing tool you can do. Yeah, go ahead.
I understood that it also increases your white blood cells. Now, I did this when my children were little. They didn't like it. You know, and a lot of people that I know, mm-hmm. is when they're feeling sick,
yeah.
at the onstart of getting into feeling,
oh, yeah.
you do that hot and cold, like you're saying, and it like multiplies those white blood cells that it's going yeah. to attack. It's like the body's like, what's going on?
Mm-hmm.
So I've had awesome experience with that.
Awesome. And with children. An easier thing to do sometimes for them is to get a cold pack and a hot pack.
Yes.
And then just put like wherever, you know, sometimes, you know, the back of the neck or the chest, somewhere on the abdomen level, and do a cold pack and then a hot pack, and then they can get a little bit of it, you know, if they don't want to dunk themselves in.
Even a fever, I'm gonna take my shoes off. It's called fever bath.
Yeah.
My girlfriend had Lyme's disease, what she was told. Mm-hmm. And she says, Rosalie, please come over here and do fever baths with me. Well, she can't. She couldn't do it by herself. Because you're taking that 98.6 temperature to like 102, mm-hmm. maybe 103 within about an hour's time.
Yeah.
And then you get out and you're like sweating all mm-hmm. these toxins out. And,
yeah.
But you gotta do it.
And that's a good time, like you mentioned, the sheet, to then wrap yourself up in a sheet and go lay down.
Yeah, you have to.
And then,
yeah.
Yeah.
No drafts.
Mm-hmm.
No fans.
Yeah, you got to stay warm. Yeah. I see it, but she had her hand raised. Did you have a question?
Put Epsom salt in the water,
mm-hmm.
in the bath,
mm-hmm.
or a friend of mine used to do apple cider vinegar. She put it in a bath and she stayed there for 10 minutes, 15 minutes. Is that okay?
Yeah, I mean, all those types of detox baths are all beneficial. I would, maybe not all of them, you know, but generally I would say those are good things to add in. Yeah?
I'll even pay you.
So explain, I know you said you did the plunge. A few years ago we were at Sukkote in Kentucky, and the place we were at had a living stream running behind it. And so we were bigfoot in that living stream. Oh. And I remember it was so cold. It was probably October. It was so cold that when the person that was helping me get me under, I couldn't even breathe when I went under it. And it was freezing. But when I came out and got out of it, I just had this warmth all over me. I was like in front of a, you know, be in front of a fireplace and just feeling this warmth. Illuminating from my body. Why?
Why? Okay. Well, I mean, you were being mikvahed, so some of that certainly could have been spiritual, so I won't discredit that. But physically, I can, you know. So when you go into a temperature extreme, okay, so you went cold, your body's natural inclination is to heat you up, right? So that, in my opinion, that would be your body trying to warm you up. Warm you back up, right? This is sometimes why it's contraindicated to do things in the wrong season. So for example, to do an ice water bath, you have to be careful in the summer because it does signal your body to heat back up in a way. You have to balance it. Same thing with I'll do sauna. I have a sauna at home and I'll do it in the winter. However, I will always do a cold shower afterwards because I don't want my body to think the environment is hot, because it's not, it's cold. I want it to remember that it's cold, so I'll typically do a hot sauna and then I will do a cool, not cold shower afterwards to remind my body that it's cold out. But I would think that that's kind of what you experience, is your body signaling we need to warm up. Because this is cold. That sounds pretty cold. Does that make sense?
And I knew it was a spiritual thing, but I knew it was also had
something physical.
Something to do with experience as well.
Yeah.
So another hot cold therapy that my husband and I do is we have a hot tub. Our hot tub's outside. So December, January, it's cold. Mm-hmm. And you get down in that hot water, and we do pretty hot water for our hot tub. And then we go and we set up on the side of it until we're super cold.
And then give it again.
Down in it.
Yep.
And, you know, back and forth.
Yep.
So
that's I do a similar thing. I'll go in my sauna and then I'll go sit outside.
Right.
And because it's cold.
Get
some snow on
and
me, maybe if
so
I really.
To go back into the sauna, but then you get so hot that it feels so good to get out of the cold. So
But doing that, you have to really stay hydrated too, I will say, and you got to watch your electrolytes with that. Yeah.
I think one of the things is we don't like to sweat, but we have to sweat. We have to get that out of us, and it's good to sweat.
Yes, I mean, so the skin being your largest detoxification organ, right? Because it's the biggest, really. Toxins leave through sweat, and when you're sweating, they're coming out. So toxins leave through generally water, so urine and sweat. That's how they exit. And when you're sweating, your body is generally, if you have really bad smelling sweat, that means there's toxins leaving your body, usually. So you need to keep sweating. Yeah.
I was just gonna caution anybody that would do a hot and cold, don't do it by yourself, because there have been cases where people do get lightheaded.
Yeah, and that's usually.
You gotta be careful.
The electrolytes and hydration can help, but especially people that have lower blood pressure. Mm-hmm. When you get in a hot tub or a sauna, the blood pressure is usually what'll start to tank out, and you gotta go slow. You get lightheaded, things like that. So, good point. Okay, where are we? All right, sun. So, sun is good. Does anybody think the sun is not good? Hopefully, we all think the sun is good. We don't hide from it.
It brings life.
It's, you know, I'm not an advocate of sunscreen. I never have been.
Or sunglasses.
None of that. I don't wear any of that. Yeah?
Do you know Dr. Reuben Jordan?
Yeah.
I love him, but he said that if you go and buy sunscreen and put it on your body and then go outside, you are baking chemicals into your skin.
Absolutely. Yep.
Poison into your skin. Yeah. He says, don't do it.
I mean, you look at the ingredients on those things, it's not like it's just coconut oil. You know, they have to put chemicals in there to stop the sun from doing what the sun does. Yeah. And I don't know about you, but the Father made the sun and everything was good.
Yeah.
So the sun is good. The animals don't hide from the sun. I'm not going to hide from the sun. But skin cancer is a thing. The sun does cause damage to our body, but not because the sun is bad. Our bodies have some problems sometimes. So, So the sun, basically what happens is the sun does cause oxidation in our body. So there's like the free radicals and the oxidants, or excuse me, the antioxidants. Antioxidants are like your vitamin E and your vitamin A and all these good nutrients, vitamin C, that do these good things in your body that basically travel around the body and stop free radicals from damaging tissue. Free radicals is what one of the major things that ages us, damages tissue. They're basically unhappy molecules that go around destroying things. Antioxidants come along and stop them. So when the sun shines on our skin, lots of things happen, but kind of the negative, not really negative, but quote unquote negative, is the fact that oxidation is happening and free radicals are produced. Now, if you have good amounts of antioxidants in your body, not a problem. If you don't, you're going to get sunburned. If you are typically one that gets sunburned, you either are high, you're either, you know, Northern European ethnicity where you're not used to as much sun as you're getting, which can happen, and or you are deficient in antioxidants. Vitamin D, vitamin E, some B vitamins all contribute to that process of handling the oxidation from the sun. So boost up your nutrients. Don't put on sunscreen.
Sun.
Yes. So it's right. Very.
So I've started studying out the sun. I could do a whole class on sun, right? One thing that I have started doing is I get up before daybreak. Put my clothes on. I don't even brush my teeth. I might put my hair up and outside I go, right? And I get that first morning light, and then I linger into sunrise, because UVA and UVB doesn't happen until an hour after sunrise,
mm-hmm.
right? So all that healing sun is coming into your eyes. You're also setting your circadian rhythm so mm-hmm. you can sleep, right? And so, and then you're grounding while you're out in the sun. And so sun is amazing. People are healing their children that are ADD
mm-hmm.
by them going out in that first morning light. Right. And so,
yeah, and think about.
I studied a lot on it, and so that's something you guys might want to do, is just study it out. And I have an app that's called Circadian that tells when everything's taking place during the day. So,
oh, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, and one of the things to consider is how much sun you get versus how much light. In a room, in a building,
yes.
you get.
Yes.
Our bodies don't really, they know the difference, but they don't, right? So this is how, when the sun sets, and the Father tells us that's it, that's the end of the day, we flip the light switch on, tell our body, no, the day continues.
Right.
Stress.
Right.
So yeah. This is supposed to be a time when we're moving out of that. Go ahead.
Yes, I have a question. I heard from someone that as you age, let's say over 60 like I am, that the body cannot assimilate the D3 from the sun, vitamin D, as it used to.
Mm-hmm. So that's a really interesting topic. So there's a lot of things going on with when sun hits your skin to where it turns into what they're measuring as far as D3. Or D25OH or whatever's on your lab report that's saying you're low. You need a lot of things happening in the body, but you need a healthy liver and a healthy gut. Mm-hmm. A lot of us don't have that. And typically as we age, the body doesn't work as well as it did when we were younger. So those sorts of systems are, of course, going to, all our systems are generally not gonna work as well as they did 10 years ago or 20 years. The longer we're here, usually. And the less we've taken care of our body, you know, the more it's going to be running out and not running as smoothly as it had before. So getting those organs and systems, the liver and the colon, can help. Getting more sunlight, of course, can help, but that doesn't always. A lot of times people will be out in the sun. They also need not have sunglasses on as well. There's several other factors going on there. Yeah.
And Kim will agree with me that the more you go through your healing and understanding, the more you find out, oh, we were so light too, you know. Mm-hmm. But one thing that helped me with the sun, because I'm light skinned, European, right? Is I cut out seed oils.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What kind of
seed oils.
Oh.
And when I cut out seed oils and I went to butter and tallow, I haven't burnt since.
That's any kind of oil made from a seed. So
canola, safflower, sunflower.
It's because the oils are oxidized. Those are all huge sources of free radicals. Free radicals come from something that is usually cooked and heated up and then becomes unstable. So you ever see a bottle of olive oil? And really good quality olive oil will be in a dark bottle. Anybody know why it's in a dark bottle? Yeah, it oxidizes in sunlight. Then what do? We take it home and we dump it in a pan and we cook with it.
And raise it to way too high of a temp.
And under super high heat, which is what the packaging is preventing it from doing, because it oxidizes. And oxidation is typically like, you ever open a bag of potato chips? It's old and it has that rancid kind of smell.
Horrible.
That's what that is. That's cooked processed fats.
So then what would you suggest as an alternative, broth or stock to cook your food?
Typically, like, yeah, something less, less, yeah, yeah, yeah. You can,
yeah,
you can.
Sometimes you need like
something kind of lubricate. Yeah, if you have to use a fat, typically your saturated fats are going to be better. Your coconut is your vegetable source, and then of course your butter is your non-vegetable, your animal source with that. I don't know whose hand was up first, so I don't know, we'll go with you.
So what organ in your body affects your eyes the most?
Your liver.
Really?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Your liver. Okay, right here.
Avocado oil, that can take a higher amount if you're looking for an oil.
Yeah, I still wouldn't. I mean, it's better, but I would use I would use saturated fat, because saturated fat, the difference between saturated and unsaturated is saturated is solid at room temperature. And what does that mean? That means that the molecule is saturated with carbon. So it's, what that means is it's stable. So when you put it in heat, it doesn't move around as much and it doesn't spontaneously create these free radicals, because when you heat up oils, they move around, and if they're liquid, they move around quicker. These mono unsaturated oils, they move around a lot, and when they're moving around because you're heating them, because heating makes things move, right, and speeds them up, they break apart and they become incomplete molecules and they become free radicals. That's what happens with the oils. So fats, really, all this added fat that we consume in oil form is not very natural at all. So it's a good point. It's a good point. And
I have really dry skin,
mm-hmm,
normally. But for years now I've been taking a tablespoon or two tablespoons of olive oil in the morning and chugging it down. Totally changed my skin,
mm-hmm,
texture. Mm-hmm. I don't get, you know how in the winter your legs get kind of dry and flaky?
Yep.
I don't have that anymore.
Awesome.
I haven't had it in years from that. And then I wanted to say something about light.
Mm-hmm.
I came from Arizona, and the reservation there, the Navajos, a lot of them don't have electricity. And when the sun goes down, they go to bed.
Mm. Mm. Yep.
And I thought, yep, really,
I love it.
It's supposed to be.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Right. I mean, this is what they used to do before there was electricity, or they would have candles.
Yes.
Right, is what they would have. And so when we've got
the same light.
Right, when we have artificial light, the lights that we have, they basically are so similar to the sun that our body still thinks it's daytime, right? So we can, if we get up with the sun, let's say, and it's winter, when we don't get much sun in the winter, and then, you know, sunsets, let's say, at 5 o'clock, but we turn the lights on at 5, we can extend what our body should not have extended the day 4 or 5 hours, 6 hours, depending how late you stay up. Oh yeah, that's a whole nother one. So our body, we're stressing our bodies with that because we are supposed to be in the dark. Yeah.
So how do we realistically like not turn the lights on? Like, do you not turn the lights on?
So in times before I've done candles. In the winter it's not as ideal when the sun's setting at 5. Because I don't go to bed at 5. So, you know, there's balance. So I actually have full spectrum bulbs in my house. I don't know if any of you heard of full spectrum lights. Full spectrum. They are more what mimic the sun. That's an option. And then different types of colored light bulbs is another option. You can buy red light bulbs, and red is the color you want to avoid is blue. I'm sure probably some of you have heard that, right? Blue light, that's on our devices, our phones, our computers. A lot of these devices have blue light filters. You want to use that, especially if you're on your device after the sun has set or when you're trying to sleep, because that's the type of light that'll stimulate our cortisone and our hormones that keep us awake. So most of your devices should have that. If it doesn't, you can easily download an app. I believe it's free. That just allows that to filter off the blue light. Very simple to do on your device. Yeah, and red lights, you can buy bulbs. And you can, you can buy that. I mean, it's not the same, right? So if you really need a true light bulb, you can do full spectrum. But in other places where you can do the red light, that is another option too. Yeah.
I have a question about grounding. Because I've heard of it before. Is it more of like a balance thing? Or is it like putting your feet in the dirt?
It's more about having your bare feet touching the earth.
And touching the hands.
Yeah, you can do that too, but it's because we are energetic beings. And we talked about this a bit yesterday, when you're on a fast, on a water fast, and you're not eating and you have energy, where's that energy coming from? You know, I mean, we're primarily spirit and we're energy, and the earth is a magnetic field. And so when we have rubber, these aren't rubber, these are mostly cork, but when we have rubber, which is what mostly is on the bottom of shoes, it stops that. Yeah, that's one of the reasons. Yeah, so yeah, nice transition into the last one, which is grounding or getting out on the earth. The most known thing is the grounding, which is why I listed it. But the earth in general is very healing. Yeshua used it to heal somebody. Took the clay, right, and I believe it was probably more clay than dirt. Spit in it, put on his eyes, and we are healed. And clay has very drawing properties, right? Like I was saying, and it's absorbent, it pulls out toxins out of the body. So, I mean, you can certainly walk around on the earth and get that energetic field, and that doesn't take much. Doing it first thing in the morning, I think, is one of the best times to do it, because that energetic field.
What do you release into the soil and pull back up? Do you release negative ions and pull in positive ions, or do you release positive ions and pull in negative ions?
As far as the magnetic field with the earth, you know, it's positive and negative balance, you know. I don't know that I know which one or the other. I think that's a part that didn't matter so much to my mind, so I didn't remember it. It's like, okay, it's the flow of the energy of the earth entering it. You're conducting
ions
it.
Ions into the soil, and the soil is going to pull ions back into your body.
I believe it's so negative. I believe it's negative ions that go in. Yeah.
I walk in my house in barefoot, but I got wood floors. Count for anything, or that doesn't?
If you had dirt floors, it would count, I would say, which is what they used to have, right? They used to have dirt floors, and then they could just walk around. But, I mean, I don't wear shoes in my house. I hardly ever wear shoes. I almost never wear shoes, but I'm presenting, so I'm wearing shoes. But
with the dirt, most likely is what that helps.
You have to be touching the earth.
The earth.
And you can wear, like, one of the exceptions I understand is moccasins, right? Because it's leather. It would not interfere with that. Hemp is another one. Cork, I believe, is close. Natural substances, you know, cotton, the little children's booties that are just cloth and stuff, you know, those sorts of things. Shouldn't as much as well. Yeah.
Can you are you all clear because your feet can soak up everything? You can soak parasites.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to step in animal droppings, right? That's not a good experience. But unfortunately, there's parasites everywhere. And I truly believe parasites to be spiritual and not physical. So I feel like if we're exposed to a parasite and there's not a spiritual ground for it to stand on, it's not going to stand. If there is, well, you're going to get that parasite anyway. So that's a very different mindset I can't usually talk about in the office. If I test somebody for parasites, they got it. I can't tell you, well, what spiritual demons do you have going on in your life? It's not going to go over well.
That's pretty offensive, huh?
Yeah, I don't say that, but.
A parasite is one who sits at another's table.
Yeah.
We all have parasites in our eyes.
Pretty much.
So.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're
yeah, that's another really good detox to do that, I, you know. Yeah, it's and you can do parasite detoxes. But really, I think for believers, if you address the spiritual aspect, those parasites are done. There's when you do water fasting, you'll see parasites go with that too. Again, because you're cleansing spiritually, I think. Okay, was there a question over here before she raised her hand that I'm skipping? No? Okay, good.
Just to reiterate, one of my friends, she passed a bunch of ropeworms that were big, and she literally does say that she feels like she had them because she had a problem with gossiping. And that was kind of like
amazing.
What taught her through those parasites.
Beautiful. I had somebody close to me did a... I won't mention because you probably know who it is. Some of you would. Did a parasite cleanse. And she passed ropeworms. And afterwards, so she had major improvement in her health in doing so. But afterwards, her struggle with lust was like minimal. Like it went from huge lust.
Lust. Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah, it was huge for her. Big problem. But on the other side of it, no. And she didn't really do much for it either, but it significantly, which was, usually I tell people to focus on the spiritual factor first, but that was one of the instances where I had an experience where I saw somebody that they focused on getting rid of the parasite and it improved their spiritual life. So that was pretty cool. Yep, so it can be pretty powerful. What's that?
It's okay to have dirty feet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Other things that you can do instead, besides grounding, is what we were talking about earlier with the clays. So you can do, so clay is a form of earth.
Yes.
Right? So you can buy clays. I have really, you really, really, really want to be careful where you buy clays from. Really, really careful because clays bind to whatever's around them. So if you're buying clays from a place that is not paying attention to what's in the soil they're getting it from, let's say it's full of metals there, well, there's metals in your clay. So you want to buy from a company that's really well known. I like Vitality Clays and something or other. If you want that direct link, take my card, I'll email me and I'll get it to you. They have good quality. Ancient, there's another one, Ancient Minerals. I don't have all this memorized. I've got bookmarks for that, so I can easily pull that up. But I don't remember. Ancient something or other. But you want to make sure they're testing what they're getting. Otherwise, you're possibly exposing yourself. So for people that can't get outside or don't want to get outside or whatever, clay soaks, and you basically can just take a little tub of water, put some water in there, put some clay in there, and just stick your feet in it. It's very similar. Or you can make a kind of like a mud pack, right? Like Connie was saying, stick it on your feet, let it dry, though it can take a while to get it to dry.
Mm-hmm. And are you saying that it will pull the toxins out? Is that what
you're saying? Yep, pulls toxins out. And then you are just getting clay is healing, and you are getting earth, an earth part of the earth healing qualities. Yeah.
Bought a bag of ink.
We'll get you both. It's okay.
We bought a bag of ancient salts for like $150 mineral salts. They're fantastic. They're flakes.
So magnesium?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, similar to Epsom salts kind of thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, those are good things for baths. That's probably what you do with them. You add them to your bath? Yeah.
And my foot, I have a foot thing. Foot
soaks.
I put my feet in and do it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, another good thing to do while you're fasting. Yep, a good way to get your minerals. Yeah?
I went to a chiropractor years ago,
and he put, I did a foot kind of a bath. I don't even know what was in it, but it was black.
Was it a ionic foot detox?
I don't know. I don't remember.
Okay.
Remember?
Well, that'll usually turn the water all different sorts of colors.
Yeah, and they can, he can determine.
Yep.
Like we burn with wood, heat our home with wood.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he could tell that, but the color of the clay.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now, you talked about salt. I get my salt from Redmond. They take it out of the mines, the salt mines in Utah.
Mm-hmm.
So you get all the minerals with that and everything. You can even buy salt blocks and things like that for your animals and things of that nature. I don't know what the ancient salt, I don't know where that's from. But I don't know.
It sounded really good and it was all, but I think I paid too much for it.
Sometimes that happens. Yeah. So, all of these things. I love that we sat and talked about all these good things that you can do while you're fasting. These are all things the Father made. These are these four things. The sun, the earth, the water, the air. He made those for us. The animals are in it all the time. Every day. All the time. How often do you see a sick animal? Mm-hmm. Not a pet. A wild animal. Sick. Very rarely. Very rarely. They are in nature all the time. And they eat 100% natural diet. They don't mess with it. They don't alter it. They eat it directly from the earth as it came, and that's it. And they don't get sick. So I think we have a lot we can learn from them. All right, next slide, please. Okay, so these are some of the fun things that happen during different stages. So day one, most of you, again, kind of have experienced some of this, but you use up. Can you guys read this, hopefully? I know it's a little bit smaller. I'll read it. So day one, you used stored sugar, which is your glycogen. Glycogen is stored in your liver, and some fat, perhaps, towards the end of the day. Generally, you're kind of just living off of yesterday's food on day one. You might get fatigued, brain fog, probably going to be hungry, cravings, maybe moody, headaches. Do we relate some of this we've experienced, perhaps? You can feel really good. Some people do, some people don't. All right. Day two or three of a water fast. Start to burn more fat, and you start moving into ketosis. Does everybody know what ketosis is? This is when we're basically burning fat instead of what's sugar as a sugar source. Tongue discoloration. So I don't think I've ever talked to anybody that has not had their tongue change color during a water fast. You'll get a white film usually, or a yellow film, or some kind of film on your tongue. It's kind of gross, but this is the body going through detoxification and it shows up. It's important to mention because if you ever get into long-term fasting, one of the indications that you are done is when your tongue is clear. It actually naturally will clear up. So it's pretty cool to see that. So that doesn't necessarily mean you're done, but that's an indication of like, oh, I've really shifted here. So I've had my tongue clear and I was like, okay, I'm not done, clearly. clearly need more healing. And you can continue to feel, the brain fog, maybe some fatigue, You could definitely still have hunger in day two and day three going on there. Day four to six, your body starts getting used to ketosis and using fat for energy. It usually is converted completely over at that point. You can see increased energy. This is where you start to see a rise in the human growth hormone and in stem cells. So this is where the research is, where your DNA starts to get reset, where stuff starts to repair. You got autophagy here as well, which is where you have your body, again, looking at old cells, so it's done digesting food. It's your day four, your five, or six, your body's like, okay, we're not digesting food anymore. We're not dealing with things coming into anything with the digestive system, so it shifts gears. So it says, okay, now I can start cleaning house. Now I can start cleaning this place up. So it looks at the cells in the body and it says, okay, what cells are floating around that are not very healthy? What cells are kind of running at, 2% or 10% versus 100%? So the immune system will start breaking them down and destroying them and creating brand new healthy new cells that are way better functioning. So autophagy is the kind of medical term for healing. You know, your body is healing your cells, resetting your cells. That's part of the stem cells, that's part of the DNA reset. You're now making new cells. Hormone optimizing starts happening, so you see hormones shifting and changing. An appetite can start going away at this point. A lot of appetite can be highly dependent on how you start your fast. So if you're doing a water fast, say I'm starting it today, and I ate my normal standard diet yesterday, I'm probably going to be hungry quite a bit. However, if I transition doing a juice fast, so if I do a juice fast for a couple days beforehand, I've already kind of transitioned my body a little bit in that direction, and I typically am going to have less hunger. There's different things that you can do before your fast that can make the hunger less. That's one. There's modifications you can do to your diet, but if you go straight from, and you can, straight from your regular diet into fasting, you're going to typically have more hunger.
I noticed specifically because of the Fortona, because it's told for us, it's water and food fast.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I've noticed over the years of doing that, we are better if we eat light before and light breaking.
Right. Great point. Yeah, exactly. And then I'm guessing probably other people have experienced that as well. So generally the appetite's gonna be better if you can have that kind of idea going into it, to not like, oh my goodness, what's my last meal? Oh, because I used to do that, like, oh, my final meal. And it was gonna be a good one. But more so transitioning my body and getting ready to go into it. The appetite can be better. Day 7 to 14, if you're someone that's venturing there, you get really deep cleansing. The ejection of toxins really ramps up at this point. It comes through, of course, the mucus, the stool, urine, and sweat. Those are the modes that toxins leave the body. Any way you can increase any of those modes is going to be wonderful. We've talked about some of that already.
And I was amazed. You still have stools at day 7 through 14. You haven't eaten all that time.
You can.
You do have it. Absolutely.
You can. Like I said, when I spoke of that.
Releasing all that out.
We are usually full of it.
All those years.
We are full of it, right? If you think of all the food, basically when you're looking at your bowel health, if you think of all the foods you've eaten, the same, it needs to equal the same amount you've eliminated. If it hasn't, there's stuff in there. And it's going to keep coming. So, yeah, that's definitely. But that's cleansing. You can see, so more in this, you can see what are called like healing crises. You can see them a little bit sooner. But this can be irritation or healing, and usually, and or healing of old injuries. So if you have something with your health that is not, you know, favorable, that you're looking for healing, a lot of times it reactivates. It kind of, you go through it again. So an old injury, for example. So if somebody was injured when they, you know, 10 years ago, let's say, and it kind of healed, it mostly healed as good as it was going to, but maybe it didn't 100% go back to normal. Maybe there's some arthritis in that area now, or maybe there's something. So the body moves on, and because life goes on, and it does the best it can to heal that tissue and then go on. But during a fast, your body can decide, well, we're going to go clean that up. So let's say it's your wrist. So your body can go into, your immune system can go in there and like, okay, we're gonna clean up the old tissue, scar tissue, inflammation, damage, and so that area can get inflamed. Inflammation is essentially when tissue is damaged and you have the blood go into that area and the immune system go in that area and it swells. So if I were to get bonked on the head, this area would swell very quickly. And what that really is, the reason it swells is because blood is increased into that area and white blood cells are increased into that area, which are going to heal all the damaged tissue because I just bonked my head. So that's an inflammation response. So you can see swelling happen because things are rushing to that area to heal it again, and hopefully permanently. So then you can feel kind of pain and achiness as that healing is happening. And then as long as you don't stop your fast, you can move through that and be completely healed. I can't tell you how many achy, like I've gone into several ones where I've had an achy something, and at the end of it, it's completely gone.
Yeah,
I've had one where I couldn't put weight on my wrist. I wasn't really sure what it was, but at the end of a week fast, it was gone and it's never come back. That was years ago. So, and that's just very little examples. You could have significant healings happening of, I believe, nearly everything. If you weren't born with it, I believe that a fast can heal it. You can have increased energy, better focus, better moods. You know, a lot of that you can kind of have up and down days. Some days it's going to be a little bit more intense on the healing side of things, and some days you're going to feel a little bit better. And then if you get into 15 plus days, you know, if you're one of those, that is where you actually see, you can see tumors, cysts, fibroids go away. You can see any kind of arthritic buildup in the joints and the back. Those can get dissolved, calcium deposits, those can go away. Organs can completely go away. I did hear one person say they grew back their thyroid. Stuff like that. Yeah, I believe that there was an idea that they still had an itty tiny little piece of it still in there that it grew from. But the body is amazing. Toxins continue to leave. And then, yeah, the better and worse days. Usually weight loss is going to be happening, if you're doing this for weight loss, the whole time. Again, like a woman's cycle is going to, sometimes you'll see fluctuations with a woman's cycle. Men, it's pretty straightforward. You just lose it regardless of the time. Yeah?
Is it vary with different women, or is there a specific time in our cycle that is optimal?
Yes. So typically with a regular cycle, the times that you want to do a fast are going to be pertaining to the cycle days when your hormones are lowest. So that can generally be said when it's going to be best. So generally the week before your period, you don't want to, like, because your body's gearing, body's in let's make a baby mode. So typically a fast is stress on the body. There's a lot of good stress, right? Exercise is stress. Heating your body up is stress. Cooling your body down is stress. But fasting is stress because you're not eating. So when you're trying to get pregnant and then you're also stressed, that's kind of like contradictory. The body wants, there's basically two hormones, progesterone, which is your pregnancy hormone, and cortisol, which is your stress hormones. Cortisol, your stress hormones, convert progesterone to stress hormones. They can steal it. So fasting during that time can throw off progesterone, kind of thing. So typically you don't want to do it. You don't want to do it around right before your period. So a week before.
So then probably after would probably be best.
Yep.
What about with sleeping at night? When you do this, because when I did my juicing fast for 15 days, I had so much energy and I just didn't feel tired.
Yep.
I don't want to go to bed.
Yep.
Full of energy. So
yeah.
How do you do that at night so you can sleep good and at the same time?
Well, I mean, I've had fasts where I've had tons of energy like that and couldn't sleep. I just didn't sleep. I'd stay up and, you know, I'd spend time with the Father. I'd spend time with the Word. I'd been trying to get clarity on what I was trying to get clarity on. And yeah, that's what I would do. If I wasn't tired, then, unless you felt like you were tired and you couldn't sleep. Now that's something I would be more concerned about, where, like, you know, I'm feeling like I should be sleeping, but I'm not. But if you have that good energy, then I would use it, you know, for good things at that time and all that. So yeah, there is the amount of numerable benefits is outside. Where are we at with time? Anybody know? I'm probably over.
30.
I'm way over. Go ahead.
I mean,
are we talking what kind of age is the child that you're nursing? Brand new baby, like a newborn?
No, let's say 6 months.
6 months, okay. Because just trying to figure out how much they're, because it's going to depend on how much they're truly requiring nutrients from you. So I would say if you're the primary source of nutrients, juice fasting, depending how long you're doing it, is fairly okay. As long as you're not, you know, if you're doing it super long, you just want to watch and make sure they do okay. okay with it. You always want to watch them and make sure that they're doing all right. You know, you can usually tell when your baby's off if they're like, you know, digesting is usually where it goes, or they're cranky or something like that. But yeah, juice fasting, as long as you're getting enough calories.
I have a thought on that. So it being a liquid in your body, would it be bringing toxins into that you're releasing? Does that happen?
So I would say that's one of those controversial. That's what we're told, is okay. you can't do any detoxification while you're nursing, because you're going to share that with your baby.
To the baby.
I think there's some truth to that, and there's some not. From, you know, it's the body is smart, and just like in pregnancy, body does everything it can to not get toxins to the baby. It does everything it can to not give toxins to a born baby, kind of thing. And typically, if you're not doing something overly stimulating to put toxins in your blood, because your milk's made from your blood more so, if you're just detoxing your liver, detoxing your colon, that's not really always involving your blood or dumping toxins into your blood. So you're having an awareness of what you're doing there. Okay, I'm gonna try to get into the next part. So next slide, please. Okay, different reasons why you should possibly end your fast sooner than you anticipated. Very extreme lightheadedness or passing out. I shared my experience with that. Very bad, you know, diarrhea, vomiting could be just because you're losing your fluids and you don't want to do that. These are not very super common, but these are typically, if someone is going to have a reason to, I need to break this now, these are going to be some of the things. Heart palpitations, feeling really, really kind of out of it. That I've experienced myself and said, okay, I'm done. And that's basically when you have too many toxins floating in your bloodstream and they're going to your brain and you're really kind of feeling it. And so, and on a water fast, you can't take anything to counter that. So I broke it. If your weight starts to get too low, and usually hunger does go away in a long water fast. And then if your hunger actually returns, that's usually your body speaking to, we're done. Okay, next. All right. What is the number one mistake people make during a fast? Who knows?
Going too fast?
No? Any others? Yeah?
Maybe drinking stuff that they, other than water?
Mm-mm. I don't know, maybe. I've talked a little bit about it. But,
resting.
Huh?
Resting.
Mm-mm. Are you raising?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not relying on the Father for the strength.
Well, that's a really good.
That is a good.
It's a good one, but that's not the one.
That's
okay.
You're not planning it?
No. Okay, go ahead. Next slide. What you eat after your fast is nearly, if not 100% as important as your fast.
Yes.
Because when I talk about people dying from fasting, it's almost always because of how they break it. Okay, next slide. So, and what you put in your body after your fast, especially if it's a long one, because your body has been in detox and cleansing mode, is what new cells will be made of. It's what new you is going to be made of. It's that first, depending on how long it's been, couple days to couple weeks, super important. But that's also where you're like really wanting to eat, right? This is why it's important to factor in that breaking of your fast with your whole fast, because you want to be able to get through that. Super, super, super important. Okay, so we're now how to break a fast. So this is very dependent on how many days you go. So this is really hard to kind of give generalities with this. Again, if you have information and you want help with this, I can help you, just email me. Generally, for every 3 days of a water fast, takes 1 day of breaking. So if you do a 3-day fast, you break it for one. If you do something like a 10-day fast, you're breaking it for 3 days. So generally, we'll talk about a 3-day fast. So phase one would kind of be, so we're going to take 1 day breaking it. Phase one, this is like breakfast, right? Would be kind of one of these things. So if I'd fasted for 3 days, my day breaking it, I would start with something over here. Would be my first meal. Something with high water content. generally, because you want something easily digestible, because your body hasn't digested food in a while. So we're gonna slowly wake it back up. So fruit is the most easily digested food. Broths are very watery in that. Juices, again, vegetable juices with that. Lunch would be phase two over there. So generally, you're gonna have any kind of less hydrating food. You know, you could still do these things. And then you can also do those, kind of adds onto it. You're just kind of increasing. These are the foods in phase two that just take a little bit more digestive power. So again, a little bit more for the body to work with. Next slide, Rosalie.
What is a non-sweet fruit?
Tomatoes, cucumbers, peppers, eggplant. Yeah. But they're high water content. So there's way higher water content in a cucumber and a tomato than there is in broccoli. Okay, because it's watery, because it is technically a fruit. Phase three would be the next thing that you could have. Raw vegetables are harder on digestion than cooked generally. This is why they're here. Same thing with salads. Greens take more digestive energy. Typically no fats or anything yet, but grains, intact grains, is typically a grain that still looks like a grain. Rice, oats, quinoa, barley, wild rice, things like that, where you cook it and it still resembles itself. Not when it's ground up and then turned into something else. That's what an intact grain is. And then beans, kind of your very whole foods. And then the last one, which would be more around dinner on the end of that day that you're breaking, you can move into your fats, your meats, preferably not real heavy fat in your meats, and then some of your dairy, healthier dairy products. And then on the last step would be you're at the end of that day, and the next day you would be back to your regular meals. You could go back into. Fasting is a really good way to change what you're eating and to slowly figure out what foods are better for you versus what's not. So especially if you've done a long fast, post-fast, it helps like, oh, well, let's see how my body does when I add this in. Because if you've done something like a 21-day fast, you are breaking your fast for a week. You're spending a week in these phases. So you can make it a nice slow process of trying to understand what feels really good for your body, what doesn't. Your tastes have more than likely changed on a 3-day water or 3-week water fast. So now you can do different things to be able to figure out, okay, I'm not gonna eat sugar anymore. I don't crave sugar anymore. I'm not gonna eat this anymore. It's a good springboard for those kinds of changes. So. Next slide, we've got another option to do it. This is not my favorite, but this is another way you can kind of do it. You can more go so where phase one is more just a small amount of food. You still want to do kind of your more hydrating foods, but you start usually with, depending on the length of the fast, as much as just a small ounce of food to a couple ounces, a small amount of food frequently, and just kind of slowly wake your body back up, and then you would do it. This is for longer fasts. Typically, if you've done just a 3-day water fast, this doesn't really work with that. This is with people that have done, you know, several weeks. And they're going to be breaking for several days. Then you can just kind of slowly increase the size of your meals is essentially the feel for this one as well. So any questions on any of that? No? Okay. All right. So only thing I have for you at this point is to ask, this is my contact information and all of that, but if there are any suggestions on any classes you would like to see health related at Sukkot, or that anybody would have. Yeah?
So, to get in touch with you, is it better to email you?
Email me. Okay. Yep. That's the best way. Okay. Any other questions? Thank you.